the church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to fight this evil.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
They become bastions of relativism, where your truth is your truth, my truth is my truth, the Catholic teaching is just one path.
By recognizing pride, Georgetown has become more true to its Jesuit values.
That's not our view, and I feel sorry for those universities. I think they've lost their moral bearings, and I think they've lost their Catholic identity.
I wouldn't even think about how to reconcile my queer identity with my Catholic faith identity if I hadn't come to Georgetown. What does it mean to be gay and Catholic? Can those two things go together? And my experience at Georgetown with other people who are Catholic and identify as queer on campus show me that you can.
As Thomas Lloyd, who is a student at Georgetown University, and Jim Tuohy, who is president of Ave Maria University, both of those universities, Catholic universities, two very different views of what Catholic identity is, especially in the setting of higher education. Joining us to talk about, and it's taken, by the way, from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly, a story entitled Catholic College Identity. Joining us to react to this story and to the varying views of Catholic identity at Catholic colleges and universities, Dr. James Hitchcock, a regular guest and professor emeritus of history at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Always glad to be here.
You just retired. You have a long and storied career in, in Catholic education. Congratulations.
I was at St. Louis U for 47 years.
When in the course of your serving in Catholic higher education did you start to get the sense that a new definition or new definitions of Catholic were beginning to be employed?
Well, as with so many things in our culture, it was the so-called 60s. I started teaching at St. Louis University in the late 60s and had been away for a while. And when I graduated in 1960, it was still a pretty thoroughly Catholic school. I could see how it had begun to change by 1966 or 67. And it was largely the effect of that upheaval of the 1960s, which everything is being called into question. The death of God theology, for example, in religion, and a lot of other things as well, and a great desire to kind of catch up. We're behind secular schools. Let's try to catch up with them.
Featured in the story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly were two universities. They were kind of compared and contrasted, one Georgetown University and the other Ave Maria University, Georgetown being the one that is kind of taking a hands-off approach to how the students and the faculty want to approach their Catholic identity. What appears to be the definition of Catholic in that kind of context?
Well, it you can have many different dimensions. I would start out by saying you have to have a very, very good, solidly Catholic theology department. You should also take that into account in closely related departments like philosophy, history, the humanities, what kind of moral atmosphere you foster on the campus. You know, is it the hookup culture? Can kids just sleep around if they want? What kind of moral guidance do they get from their teachers, from campus ministry, public occasions like commencement? Does the president take advantage of the opportunity to strikingly reaffirm the Catholic identity? Are students told, in a sense, this is what we expect of you as a graduate of a Catholic school when you go out in the world? And many, many different aspects enter into it. In case of Georgetown and Ave Maria, one very simple difference between the two of them is Georgetown was founded in 1789, and Ave Maria has only been in existence about 20 years. almost the only thoroughly Catholic colleges in the United States now are the ones that have been founded in recent years by people who had more or less given up on the older schools. There are a few of the older schools which have kind of turned themselves around, but for the most part, the 200 or so that have been in existence for a while are fairly far down the road to secularization.
Where would you put, say, probably the more famous in the United States, Notre Dame? Where would you put it? And it's been much in the news because President Obama, in various at various opportunities, has spoken there and sometimes articulated views that would be quite odd at a Catholic
right.
university. Where would you put Notre Dame on the spectrum?
Well, this is a somewhat subjective judgment. I don't think Notre Dame is as secular as Georgetown, not as secular as some others. It's a very mixed bag. If I knew somebody who was going to Notre Dame, I'd give them a list of faculty. I'd say, try to take courses from these people. These are really good people. I might give them another list and say, stay away from these people. It's a mixed bag. Notre Dame wants to, I think they want to hold on to their Catholic identity. They're not sure really how to do it. And I don't think they have, in the end, the determination to do it. The Obama incident is a very good example. You know, we want the national publicity. We want the prestige of having the president come here. Please don't mess things up for us. They would like their cake and eat it too, I guess you could say.
What roles have, in the American context, have bishops taken in the either the guidance or the correction of what's going on, what can happen at Catholic universities and colleges?
You say bishops?
Yes.
Relatively little. They have little or no legal authority over Catholic universities, all of which have their own independent boards. In terms of church authority, they could exert a certain amount of pressure. Occasionally, a bishop will speak out. The bishop of Fort Wayne, South Bend, spoke out over the Obama incident. For the most part, the bishops do tend to stay aloof. I think they many of them may regard the situation as just beyond their control. You know, there's nothing much I can do about it. I think that if bishops had been more vigorous, going back 40 years again to the 1960s, some of this could have been prevented, but there was a tendency to have hands off from the very beginning.
It isn't as though the Vatican, through several terms of papacy, haven't had some concerns to express over this. Am I right?
Yes, it has. Pope John Paul II issued a very famous document about higher education, Ex Cordia Ecclesiae, from the heart of the Church. And there is a congregation for education in the Vatican. But again, they have almost no legal authority. And of course, the universities are far away. So what do they really know about what's going on in these universities? So apart from an occasional statement, they have done really very little. You can see, I think, a kind of pessimistic drift to what I'm saying. And I would say that I think for the most part, the drift to secularization is irresistible. It will continue. It may slow down. It may speed up. Some places may be less so than others. Some departments better than others. But the long-term drift is clearly in that direction. And, of course, we should remember that except for the state universities, almost every college in the United States began as a religious institution. Harvard, Princeton, Yale, and a later generation, Duke, a Southern Methodist. And almost all these places became secular over a period of time. And I think there's no realistic basis for thinking Catholic schools won't do the same thing.
What can be done, with that said, to improve the genuinely Catholic identity on college and university campuses?
Well, you would have to have really strong leadership at the top. If you don't have a president who wants to have a good Catholic university and who is not willing to use his authority in terms of things like hiring, then it will never happen. Or who would use his authority, let's say, to put in new programs which would emphasize the Catholic character. The single most important factor, which most people don't even realize, is departmental autonomy. Each department of the university pretty much decides for itself who they'll hire, what courses they will offer, what textbooks will be used. Each department decides that for itself. So if you have a department that takes its Catholicism seriously, they will take that into account. If they don't take their Catholicism seriously, they may ignore it completely, and in some cases may deliberately move in directions of secularization. And each, you know, a university's got what, even the smallest university's probably got 25 different departments. Large ones have got maybe several hundred. And so the idea of maintaining the Catholic identity in that situation is very difficult.
With only 30 seconds, is there a desire to see more genuinely Catholic universities? You mentioned before Ave Maria. With about 30 seconds, Dr. Hitchcock.
Well, there's Christendom in Virginia. There's a Thomas Aquinas in California. There's Magdalene and Thomas More, both of which are in New Hampshire. Steubenville in Ohio is an older one that sort of turned itself around. And there are some others. University of Dallas has got a pretty good reputation. I could come up with a list of about 20 or so, I suppose, if I put my mind to it. But again, the majority of them that are really solid were founded in recent years, and interestingly enough, in each case, founded by lay people who were unhappy with the direction in which the schools were going, that were basically controlled by clergy. And so it was the lay people who came along and said, we need something better than this.
Dr. James Hitchcock is Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, thank you very much for your time. And again, congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you.
When we come back, it's Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. on this Friday afternoon, November the 1st. Pastor Heath Curtis will join us. We're going to begin a series with him on the Christ-centered life. He's written the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for November, 5 Things You Can Do to Live a Jesus-Centered Life. After that, we're going to play Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week. This is a game we like to play on Fridays with our listeners. That means we play 4 soundbites for you. You listen, and then you give us a call, you send us an email, you visit our Facebook fan page, and you vote for Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Also, your chance to win the LPR bundle package. That's the last half hour of Issues, Etc. in Hour 2 in 5 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues, Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.